You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Hold on, let's try that again. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been. Good morning on a Thursday, the 23rd day. And you know where I live. You know what we is. Of January, my cousin Tom's 60th birthday. Yeah, halfway to 120. And he's in New York City. I got a text at like 4 o'clock in the morning. Picture of New York City. I'm like, you're not in New York City, guy's never been. I'm like, what are you doing there? He said, my wife took me for my birthday. I'm like, what? It's like, what are you going to do? Like, go to plays and shit like that? I mean, there's no baseball going on. I said, so I got it. She wanted to go to New York City, gave you the trip for Christmas, for your birthday, and even an asshole like you can't say no to that. So you're going to go do girl shit in New York City because there's no baseball going on. Because Tom's a baseball guy. And he said, exactly. I'm like, wow. So happy birthday to Big Tom, my cousin. Yeah, Tom, one of my best friends on the planet, and his birthday today, 60 years old, and yeah, in New York City, so have a good time, yeah, that way, I don't know why, but all my friends, like, they know I don't sleep well, so they text me in the middle of the night, Napa Man, who always sleeps, all of a sudden, he starts sending me pictures of, like, the Civil Air Patrol mug that he got yesterday. Like, at, I don't know, 2 in the morning or something? I'm like, what the hell is going on? But I respond. And what I responded with was, you know, I gave away a coffee cup in Afghanistan, a really nice coffee cup to Montana Man, because he got his feelings hurt because the ops chief in the Combat Operations Center, I don't know how he did it, but he got a bunch of Stanley coffee cups. And they're nice coffee cups, right? Well, he got a bunch of them. And so we all got them. And then he came in. He's like, hey, where did we get these? Oh, my God. I thought he was going to start crying in the COC. I'm like, Jesus Christ, man. So, like, as is the case, I've been doing it most of my life. Looking after lieutenants, right? Looking after lieutenants. So what do? I give my coffee cup to him. Yeah. That's what kind of great human being I am. And, yeah. So Montana Man getting a checkup today. He said, hey, boys, wish me luck. I said, look, dude, only the good die young, okay? You're going to bury most of us. he said, thank you, I think. I'm like, hey, don't worry about it, man. Don't worry about it. So, yeah. So, Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny going to join me today in something we recorded last night because Jeff's traveling this morning. And let me tell you, it is long, and it is full of attention deficit disorder. This thing takes more turns than Lombard Street in San Francisco. It is crooked, but it's interesting and funny, as always. And it starts with, where do you get your news? And I mostly meant international news, right? And so So we talk about that. And then after that, we went to talking about something Andy Milburn talked about that, that Jeff is very sympathetic to, and that is firm-based security for special operations guys, right? And hunkering down inside a firm base is not the way to secure yourself. So we talk about that. And then from there, it goes all over the world, right? We talk about the Battle of Leyte Gulf again, because I sent a couple of segments, videos to watch to Tim and Jeff, and they were really interesting, you know. And I'll put the video, I'll put links to the videos in the second hour post today. So if you want to watch them, you can watch them. And they're pretty interesting. No, I won't say pretty interesting. They're really interesting. They're the best ones I've seen about the Battle of Samar, which, I mean, we talk about the USS Johnson, Captain Ernest Evans, and whatnot. And then, as a matter of fact, somebody sent me yesterday another video and said, hey, Mac, these guys survived it. And this one of the dudes talks about, you know, Commander Johnson. So anyway, so you will hear that. The what else is going on? A lot of news. So we need to get to that. I want to play a little audio again today from Lindsey Graham talking about impeachment and talk about the difference historically, which is why I kind of gravitated to this. I like Lindsey Graham, right? He was not afraid to call the president out over, you know, the president's gut reaction and pullback in Syria, you know, something I still don't understand. And so Lindsey Graham wasn't afraid to, you know, call him out. But he talks about impeachment in history. Do you know the nation's never impeached a president? Yeah. The Senate has never removed a president via impeachment. Andrew Johnson was charged. Bill Clinton was charged. Nixon resigned, right, before he could be convicted. And I believe the sequence was that when the impeachment articles were approved, Nixon resigned. If I remember the sequence of that, it never actually went to the Senate. Andrew Johnson, his impeachment, right, was initiated by the House on February 24th of 1868. 11 articles of impeachment alleging crimes. Specifically, he had removed from office Edwin Stanton, the Secretary of War, whom the act was largely designed to protect. After they passed, the House and the Senate passed a law that said he could not be removed. He attempted to replace him with Brevet Major General Lorenzo Thomas. Earlier, while the Congress was not in session, Johnson had suspended Stanton and appointed Ulysses S. Grant as Secretary of War on an interim basis. Johnson became the first American president to be impeached on March 2nd and 3rd of 1868 when the House formally adopted the Articles of Impeachment and forwarded them to the United States Senate for adjudication. The trial in the Senate began 3 days later with Chief Justice Salmon P. Chase presiding. On May 16th, the Senate failed to convict Johnson on one of the articles with a 35-19 vote in favor of conviction, falling short of the necessary two-thirds majority by a single vote. A 10-day recess was called before attempting to convict him on additional articles. The delay did not change the outcome, however, as on May 26th, it failed to convict the president on two articles, both of the by the same margin, after which the trial was adjourned. The impeachment of Andrew Johnson had important political implications for the balance of federal legislative and executive power. It maintained the principle that Congress should not remove the president from office simply because its members disagreed with him over policy, style, and administration of office. It also resulted in diminished presidential influence on public policy and overall governing power, fostering a system of government which Woodrow Wilson referred to in the 1870s as congressional government. Johnson remained the only U.S. president to have been impeached and face a Senate trial for over a century until Bill Clinton became the second in 1998. All right. So you're going to hear Lindsey Graham give a little bit of historical perspective. I used to, you know, guys that I listen to when they talk, Lindsey Graham and the departed Trey Gowdy was another one who I thought, you know, speaks the truth. And there's a couple Democrats that when I see them speak, I will listen to them. But by and large, the rest of them, blah, 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 fucking blah. So anyway, much in the news. So we shall get moving today. The United States Marine Corps ban makes today official. Good morning to you. Dedicated to my cousin Tom. It's his 60th birthday today. Yeah. How about that? So happy birthday, Tom, in New York City for the first time ever. Yeah. Okie going to New York City. So happy birthday.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. <clears throat> but I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. So, young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
We got to win. Yeah, that's why it's called post-traumatic winning. Right? Right. All right. Marineland weather. Sunny in 36 in Quantico. Mostly sunny in 50 at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. In the high desert of California, it is sunny and 49 in 29 Palms. Closer to the coast, but on the other side of the hills of the coast, so that it's inland a little bit, Camp Pendleton. It is sunny and 51. Further to the west, at Camp Smith in Hawaii, it is clear, dark, and 62. In Okinawa, it is clear, dark, and 64, so Okinawa warms up a little bit. In Afghanistan, in the south central region of Lashkar Gah, it is dark, cloudy, and 51, so Afghanistan actually warming up a little bit. And Ramadi cooled off a little bit, clear, dark, and 50 early in the evening. Al Anbar province of Iraq. At the home of All Marine Radio, it's 50 degrees and fair. Looking for a high of 73 today. 73 today. 72 tomorrow, no. And on Saturday, looking for a high of 71. Yes. That's right. How about that? All right. That's a look at the weather. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage, nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support. call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue on a Thursday. You're going to hear Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny here a little bit. Peyton Davis with us in the first hour, as is usual and customary here. But there is a lot of news, a lot of news stories. Number one, million-man protest attests the strength of Iran's push to get U.S. troops out of Iraq. What? Organized by, right? You know who. And so, again, using proxies to do what, you know, they couldn't do as a nation. This is an Associated Press article, right? Dateline is Beirut. Iran has long sought the withdrawal of American forces from neighboring Iraq, but the U.S. killing of an Iranian general and an Iraqi militia commander in Baghdad has added new impetus to the effort, stoking anti-American feelings that Tehran hopes to exploit to help realize the goal. See, this is much different, right? Remember a couple weeks ago, the New York Times characterized the people who stormed the embassy as mourners, right? So now somebody who's at least has some experience in the region pulls back the curtain and says, okay, what you're going to see is an orchestrated event orchestrated out of Iran. The article goes on. So anyway, interesting. The January 3 killing has led to Iraq's parliament to call for the ouster of U.S. troops, but there are many lingering questions over whether Iran will be able to capitalize on the sentiment. Now remember, it's a non-binding resolution. You haven't heard anything, right, from the prime minister. And we know the reason. He needs American money. He likes American money. And he needs American aviation assets to provide the intelligence to keep the lid on the country and from the country descending into a civil war. And that's just the fact. Those are just the facts. Right? An early test of whether Iran can fan the flames and turn this into something greater will be the million-man demonstration against the American presence called for by influential Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, scheduled for Friday. It is not clear whether the protesters will try to recreate a New Year's Eve attack on the U.S. Embassy compound in Baghdad by Iran-supported militias in the wake of the U.S. airstrike that killed 25 militiamen along the border with Syria. Iran might simply try to use the march to telegraph its intention to keep up pressure on U.S. troops in Iraq. Now, again, what's interesting about what Sauter said, and the article doesn't really address it yet, is Sauter said, we want all troops, right? Iranian and American out of Iraq. And that's been his position. Sauter is trying to position himself as an Iraqi first and everything else second. I mean, he's the dude that, you know, I could not even believe the picture when I saw him sitting with the Saudi prince, the dude that's the nut, right? Yeah, that guy who helped hack, I guess, right? He sends something to Jeff Bezos. Right? And Bezos' phone got hacked because of it. That might be interesting, huh? The article goes on. But experts say Iran can be counted on to try to seize what it sees as an opportunity to push its agenda in Iraq, despite an ongoing mass uprising that is targeting government corruption as well as Iranian militia in their own country. Quote, Iran is unconstrained by considerations of Iraqi sovereignty, domestic public opinion, and legality when compared to Western democracies, said David Dees Roach, an expert in the Arab Gulf States Institute in Washington, D.C. This is Iran's strategic advantage. They should be expected to press it. I'm just trying to think. I'm just scrolling to see if there's any. Here's a politician who voted for, you know, the removal of Americans in the parliament. Abdul Mahdi strongly supported the resolution, but since then, he said it was up to the next government to deal with the issue, and there are indications he has been working behind the scenes to help keep foreign troops in the country. That is quintessentially the Middle East, right? Right. They know they have to say one thing in public and then another thing in private. President Trump met Iraqi President Bahram Saleh on Wednesday on the sidelines of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. He said Washington and Baghdad have a very good relationship and that the two countries had a host of very difficult things to discuss. Saleh said that they shared common interests, including the fight against extremism, regional stability, and an independent Iraq. Asked about the U.S. the plan for U.S. troops in Iraq, Trump said, we'll see what happens. So anyway, million man march coming up in Iraq. So you'll see that. Next headline, more U.S. troops have left Iraq for medical treatment after an Iranian missile attack, according to the Pentagon. More U.S. service members have been transported out of Iraq for medical treatment and evaluations following Iran's missile attack. President Trump said 2 weeks ago that no one was hurt. The Pentagon said last Friday that the military had transported 11 service members out of Iraq for treatment and assessment. U.S. military officials declined to say on Tuesday how many more are receiving care, but said additional troops had been sent to Landstuhl Regional Medical Center in Germany. He left open the possibility that the number could increase in the coming days. Okay. Like, so are these emotional injuries? I got the shit scared out of me, right? My ears are still ringing. What are they? Right? Inquiring minds want to know. Next headline. Department of Transportation proposed. These are all Stars and Stripes stories this morning. This one from the Washington Post, right? The Stars and Stripes aggregates news, in case you don't know. Department of Transportation proposes ban on emotional support animals on planes. What? Yeah. Airlines would no longer be required to accommodate travelers who want to fly with emotional support animals such as pigs, cats, rabbits, under new rules proposed Wednesday by the Department of Transportation. The proposed rules, years in the making, narrow the definition of a service animal to dogs that have received individualized training to do work or perform tasks for a person with a disability. Psychiatric service animals, which had not previously been classified as service animals, will now be included under DOT's proposal. The changes, the DOT said, are an attempt to better define what animals would be allowed to fly and what rules travelers needed to follow. The goal, the agency said, is to ensure both safe and accessible air travel. Pigs? Really? Cats? Right? And what happens is people go to their psychiatrist and they say, well, could you write me a letter so I could take, Montana man just radioed in, all clean bill of health today. I told you, man, only the good die young. only the good die young. That dude's going to be around for a long time, right? But people go to their, you know, their psychiatrist and their mental health provider. Could you write me a letter so I could take my kitty cat on the airplane with me? And they do. I mean, I had people telling me to go do it. You know, you could take Jack on the plane. I'm like, I don't want to take Jack on a plane. You know, I did that once, and Jack, like, he lost his mind. he lost his mind. Jack has survived. Listen to this. These are things Jack survived. He jumped off the third story of my apartment in Los Angeles. He landed on the grass. He saw two dogs being walked down below after I'd moved in. And he stuck his head through the grate of the balcony. He looked around and he sees the dogs being walked by, you know, a guy and his girlfriend. And I was unpacking stuff in another room. And he jumped off the third floor, off the third story. He hits the grass next to a flower bed. And I hear this screaming, and I thought she was being assaulted. So I run to the balcony and I look, and here's these two people. And there's Jack down there. And I looked and I yelled, I said, did he get out? And she screams, no, he jumped. And I was like, that's it. That's a manly dog right there. He wanted to play with those other dogs, so he jumped off the third floor thinking that he could do that shit. I could do this. Yeah, Jack didn't move around very well for the next few days. I think he had a concussion. When he'd go to get off the couch, you know how dogs, like, they'll hop off? Jack didn't hop. He didn't hop anywhere. He, like, very gingerly put his front paws on the floor and very gingerly took his back legs off the couch. And I'd look at him and say, yeah, big man, jumping off the third floor. He jumped out of Patrick's car in San Clemente going down the coast highway because he saw another dog being walked. And Patrick was actually stopped at a light, Jack looking out the window, windows down, right? And dogs being walked on the sidewalk, right? Close to Napa Man's house. Right? We're hanging a left coming off the freeway onto the coast highway, and Napa Man kind of lives straight ahead. So Patrick says, I just see Jack's ass going out the window. And I'm like, oh shit. And I look, he said, there's a truck coming up. How Jack did not get hit, I still don't know. So that was two. He's got out a few times. Yeah, he's lived a charmed life. But taking him on an airplane, right? Taking him on an airplane, you know, or even like I've traveled and like Napa Man has dog sat for me. He's the worst dog sitter in the world. So if you're ever contemplating like going on a vacation and, you know, you're looking for a dog sitter and some dude says, hey, my name's Napa Man. I'm a professional dog sitter. He's not, right? He is not a dependable dog sitter. Okay. And then he even blamed it on his kid. Oh, my kid left the gate open. I'm like, really? Really? So, yeah. But Jack's like rolled around the coast highway. He's rolled the coast highway, for God's sakes, and did not die. Amazing. Next headline. Army's biggest exercise in Europe for the last 25 years begins at U.S. motor pools as the Motor T guys get ready to roll. About 20,000 pieces of military equipment must be deployed from the United States for Defender Europe 20, which will involve large-scale combat drills and test the military's ability to rapidly move large numbers of forces across the Atlantic. uh-oh. Military Sealift Command, that's not normally a very good story. Units from Fort Hood in Texas, Fort Bliss in Texas, Fort Stewart in Georgia, right? Heavy equipment and supplies for rail transport and onward shipping, the Army said in a statement on Tuesday, all that will be moved to Europe. Defender Europe will include about 20,000 U.S.-based soldiers, 9,000 European-based U.S. troops, and 8,000 troops from 17 allied nations, according to the United States Army. Once in Europe, personnel will take part in drills focused on defending NATO territories, such as the so-called Suwalki Gap, a 40-mile stretch of borderland between Lithuania and Poland. Yeah, the Ruskies. The Suwalki Gap abuts the Russian enclave of Kaliningrad to the west, where thousands of Russian troops, heavy artillery, and anti-aircraft missiles are based. East of the strategic border area lies Belarus, a former Soviet republic that remains closely allied with Moscow, although ties have become strained as of late between Russian Mayor Vladimir Putin and longtime Belarusian leader Alexander Lukashenko. During Defender Europe, which runs through July, quick response forces from the 82nd Airborne, HUA, will rehearse how to fight their way into the country by parachuting into the Republic of Georgia, a NATO partner country. And I'll tell you what, the Georgians, man, they like to be free, and they're not afraid to, like, stand up to the Russians, which is pretty cool. Anyway, Army, big Army going to get moving in Europe. How about that? USNI News, U.S. Naval Institute News. Some interesting stuff. Navy CMV-22 Bravo Osprey design completes its first flight. So what's the Navy version of this? The tilt rotor selected to replace the Navy's aging fleet of C-2A Greyhounds as the carrier onboard delivery aircraft. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, right, the Navy has this fleet of C-2 aircraft. They're turboprop, and you could put seats in them. You could take the seats out and put cargo in them. It's just like a long tube. Yeah. I flew out the first time I ever flew to a carrier. I flew out on a C-2. And let me tell you, I was sitting in the – you're sitting in there backwards. And my ribs were aching as I flew out to the Ranger. And I don't know why. Like, was I, like, because I was flying backwards? Like, I don't know. But, God, by the time I got there, I was, like, dying. I'm like, put this thing down, please, because my ribs are killing me. So, I don't know why this is. I mean, the Navy's already flying the Osprey. So what's unique about this? I'm not seeing it. We've been flying the Osprey around forever, so, like, what's unique about this version? Compared to the MV-22B flown by the Marine Corps, the CMV, MV is Marine Fixed Wing. C is Carrier. Anyway, CMV, but why do they have the M in there? Is V tilt rotor? I don't know. Variant has extended operational range with the ability to transport up to 6,000 pounds of cargo or personnel, 1,150 nautical miles, according to the Naval Air Systems Command. And they have a fact sheet relative to it. So maybe it has a little bit longer legs. Maybe the fuselage a little bit longer. I don't rightly know, but it's like something like that. All right. Another story. Officials. U.S.-Japan Iron Fist Amphib exercise extremely important as China's Navy expands. And so there's a picture of from Camp Pendleton. Yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's the Japanese Maritime Self-Defense Force, right? Standing in formation next to, it might be the 15th MEU. So you have the Marine, you have the American flag, the Marine battle colors, and then you have the Japanese national flag, right? the with the red circle in the middle of it. And then you have the rising sun. Oh, shit. Yeah, you have that son of a bitch. Yeah, the historically, you know, we did not. But you have it standing in formation. Wow. Never seen that. Marines and sailors have kicked off. And our good buddy, Chris Bronzy, he's the CO of the 15th MEO. Let me see if he's quoted in here. So anyway, the story, you know, let me see if there's some quotes. That's what I'm looking for. Scanning for quotes. Quote, the security environment surrounding Japan, especially along three strategic fronts, including China, North Korea, and Russia, is becoming ever more severe with dramatic shifts in the balance of power. Harada said, who is Harada? Let me go up in the article. I can't find who Harada is. Colonel Koji Harada, the Japanese Ground Self-Defense Force's deputy commander, said during the opening ceremony. Tokyo has been moving at a rapid clip in the past 2 years since it stood up its amphibious raid development brigade with training exercise held ashore and on ships with Marine Corps units in California and in Japan. The ARDB and its two regiments of sea soldiers, were established with the mission to quickly deploy to defend Japan's far-flung islands and respond to the other threats like natural disasters and humanitarian crisis. Yeah, how about that? The Japanese. And let me tell you, those islands, Japanese, man, they'll get it on with the Chinese. This guy goes on, right? Taking the severe security environment around the Indo-Pacific region into account, the U.S.-Japan alliance has become much more important than before, he said. Iron Fist, which aims to enhance the interoperability of the amphibious forces of the United States and Japan, is now extremely important. Harada said exercises like Iron Fist help strengthen our bilateral relationship and trust, which is a cornerstone of the U.S.-Japan alliance. Now, let me tell you this. You know who was instrumental in all of this and who was an advocate long before this shit was cool is Grant Newsham. Grant, when everybody else was over in the Middle East, Grant Newsham was doing amphibious operations with the Japanese. Yeah, Grant Newsham. Let's see. Here's a quote from Joker 6, Christopher Bronzy, Colonel, the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit. Quote, it is this enduring agreement that exemplifies the collective spirit of trust and cooperation that exists. Bronzy! He goes on. Japanese Ground Self-Defense Force soldiers and their command staffs will train alongside their U.S. counterparts in amphibious staff training, advanced marksmanship, amphibious reconnaissance, logistics, and medical support, and will conduct some very complicated combined arms live fire and maneuver events, Bronzy said. This training not only improves our proficiency in warfighting skills, but it also showcases our amphibious capability. From sea and land, this training will stress the full spectrum of capabilities required to fully integrate and quickly deploy sea-based assets while providing military forces in a multinational maritime environment, an environment that continuously challenges our core competencies and stresses the need for proficiency in a broad range of operations from humanitarian assistance to non-combat evacuation operations. Capable naval expeditionary forces in readiness help ensure stability and prosperity around the world. Good God, Bronzy could run for president. It is multinational exercises like Iron Fist that enable us to operate together in a dynamic maritime environment. This is good stuff. Let me see. Is there a picture of Bronzy in here? He's a New York guy. He's a Yankee fan. That's what we love about them. But the Japanese and the first N1MEF have been doing this for a long time, right? for a long time. Bronzy recently took command of the 15th MU, which last year returned from a deployment to the Middle East, where it served as the command element for Special Purpose Marine Air Ground Task Force Crisis Response for Central Command. So Iron Fist is an ideal exercise for us to kind of cut our teeth on amphibious staff planning and get back out to sea and just get used to how to plan an amphibious assault. So, yeah, if you're in the Southern California area, right, if you're in the Southern California area, you'll see them off the coast here. For the next couple weeks. So, yeah, it's not a small deal. And the Japanese are all over it. They love it. They love, coming here and to work with our special forces guys. You know, they'll do all kinds of cool stuff. From Marine Corps Times, headline, Marine Raiders led the counterattack against Al-Shabaab militants at Manda Bay in Kenya. A team of Marine Raiders led the response against Al-Shabaab's militants who raided the Kenyan Defense Force military base at Manda Bay in early January, killing three Americans, multiple sources have told Marine Corps Times. This is written by Philip Attlee and Sean Snow. Snow, a former Marine. I don't know Attlee. The January 5th attack on the base housing U.S. troops resulted in the death of one service member and two DOD contractors. The East African terrorist group, which is affiliated with Al-Qaeda, also destroyed a number of contractor-operated civilian aircraft before the Marines arrived. Multiple sources within the Raider community told the Marine Corps Times that about a dozen Marines from 3rd Raider Battalion, based out of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, led Kenyan commandos against the Islamic militants. The Marines engaged in an intense firefight with the Al-Shabaab militants, the sources said, ultimately pushing the Islamic fighters out of the base. At least one Marine Raider was injured during the fighting. Marine Corps Times is unable to confirm the severity of the injuries. And then it talks about the soldiers that were killed in the attack. So news from Marine Raider land. So well done, boys. And girls, if you're out there. Next headline. New in 2020, more gigantic exercises for the Marine Corps. This is like small home. We were talking about Bronzy a few minutes ago, who's my buddies who I was chatting with this morning. Right? We all served together in Afghanistan. Well, with General Furness and who held put together the largest Marine Corps exercise since forever out in 29 Palms. So headline, and then just Chris Bronzy, who was also with us in Afghanistan. New in 2020, more gigantic exercises for the Marine Corps. Whoa. Listen to this. In June 2019, 2nd Marine Division, based at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, conducted the largest air assault in a decade when nearly 500 Marines loaded into 6 CH-53 Super Stallions and 8 MV-22 Ospreys to offload and set up a perimeter meeting an opposing force of more than 60 Marines. In November of 2019, the 2nd Marine Division, right, again, this is General Furness doing this shit, right? And the unknown story after being around those guys and his staff, is that, they kind of challenged the air wing. Hey, let's do something big. I mean, we talk about doing this stuff, but, we never do it. Can you support moving us? And how many can we get there in one lift? So some pretty cool pictures came out of it. In November of 2019, 2nd Marine Division once again conducted an unprecedented exercise, sending roughly 10,000 U.S. Marine sailors and British Royal Marines to 29 Palms for an unscripted force-on-force exercise. General Roger Turner, who I taught as a second lieutenant, was out there helping to coordinate the exercise. Major General David Furness, the division's commanding general, said a Marine exercise of the scale, force-on-force, multi-regiment, outfitted with significant information operations and unmanned aerial assets hasn't been conducted in the Marine Corps in my lifetime. To finish the year, the 1st Marine Division kept with the theme conducting the largest ever Steel Night, an annual 1st Marine Division exercise. The 2nd Marine Division in the upcoming year currently plans to conduct a naval large-scale exercise in May, but has not released any details about it. Right? In an effort to continue to challenge our Marines and prepare them for realistic operations. So, yeah, I'm not sure that those exercises are what happened in October, November of last year, but it's a good headline. Next headline, 31st MEU puts Corps' littoral tactics and 21st century foraging to the test. Yeah. So 21st century foraging, that means you're going to go live off the land, right? So how does this work? Marines with Combat Logistics Battalion 31 were tasked with maintaining logistics support to the MEU despite operating separated, all while avoiding the simulated enemy and maintaining self-sufficiency, according to a press release from the unit. So how do they do it? They take cash. They buy food for 1,200 Marines off the open market. Logistics Marines set up a dispersed command and control element that was constantly on the move using atmospheric water generation and supply drops and other modern tactics to test the tactics required for operating in littoral areas, increasing the Corps' ability to operate in contested littoral areas in the Pacific has been a major focus for Marine Corps Commandant David Berger. So, yeah. In prepping for war, the 31st MEU in 2019 conducted simultaneous split operations. Marines were spread out over 4,000 miles. By putting only the logistics element of the MEU on Tinian, the Northern Mariana Island, the Corps continued to test and experiment with its separated operations and littoral capabilities. So this is trying to prove whether you can do it. Like, you can say it, right? But how many MREs are you going to drop? And then people are going to move because you got to move because munitions are more lethal. And then we all got to carry that, right? We're all walking around like camp, like mules. 21st century foraging is a future operations requirement and one that we are constantly improving on. Incorporating organic field dispersing and supply capabilities into our concept of support will make us more expeditionary, flexible, and responsive. Yeah. Does it work, though? Does it work? Interesting. You know, a lot of people have done expeditionary stuff in the past. You know what they do? They give somebody a bag of rice. Hey, you can exist on this for a while. Go ahead and kill a frog and fry it up and throw it in your rice. Give it some flavor, right? Or here's a case of ramen. See you in 2 weeks. Right? Light, stuff it in your pack. All the stuff that, we prohibit, you know, Marines from taking, but they stuff in their pack anyway, right? Lightweight, keeps you going, blah, blah, blah. So foraging, large unit foraging, interesting stuff. And again, integral to this whole concept of, you know, what is this expeditionary thing that the Marine Corps is going to do? What is it? It's still, very much on the drawing board, and I think very, very intellectually interesting and compelling. So I'm interested to see it as they roll it out. Trump meets Iraqi counterpart first since the Soleimani strike. So we talked about this a little bit before, but the president met with the not the prime minister of Iraq, but the president of Iraq, right? Different dude. Okay. And so they spoke, Iraq president, Barham Saleh, met with him in Davos. So we talked about that. And last story before we get to the top five stories in Early Bird. Now, this is a story that, that's a horrible story that was in the news, I don't know, a year ago, maybe longer. Headline, military wife sentenced in toddler's death wasn't authorized to provide child care in base housing. Now, this happened in Hawaii. A Navy wife has been sentenced to 28 years in prison in connection with the death of a Navy child she was babysitting at her home in privatized housing in Norfolk. This isn't even the Hawaii case. The spouse, Ashidaya Zolani Brooks, 36, wasn't an authorized or licensed child care provider, according to Katisha Drow-Fraguda, a spokesman for naval support activity at Hampton Roads. The incident occurred in Joint Forces Staff College housing. The 18-month-old toddler, Amir Melton, was the son of two sailors and died as a result of head injuries he received on October 23rd of 2018. A jury in Norfolk, as they say it, convicted Brooks of second-degree murder on January 10th. It's the second known death of a military child in the home of an unauthorized child care provider in military housing within the last 15 months. The Navy child's death occurred 4 months before the death of 7-month-old Abigail Lobish in privatized housing at Alamanu Military Reservation in Hawaii. A Navy wife who was providing child care without authorization and certification from base child care officials has been charged with manslaughter in Lobish's death. Originally scheduled for January, the trial in Hawaii has been postponed. I thought that was the case. You know, the case in Hawaii is that she had been cited multiple times, right, and told to cease providing daycare. But terrible stories. I don't know what else to say. It's just you follow those stories, you see them, and whatnot. All right, top five stories in Early Bird, and then I'll get out of the way. Jeff Kenny, Tim Lynch going to join me here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio, and it's a long. So if you're sitting at work, you can put your headset on for a while, and you can like this thing's an hour and 40 minutes. Yeah. So the first part is, you know, I have like a little script of topics, and we start going down the list, and then all of a sudden it gets off the rails, and then it's like a ADD meets like Rain Man meets like a library, and it switches all over the place. But it is interesting, I will say that, always interesting. And then Tim Lynch, for whatever reason, he cannot stop screaming into the microphone. And then it gets all distorted and I have to yell at him. I'm like, what the hell, man? I have to do shithole weather too. I forgot to do it. Top five stories in Early Bird. Number one, Esper's balancing act in Pensacola, showing support for shooting while encouraging training foreign allies. Look, nobody believes that we shouldn't train foreign allies. It's a huge part of what the United States does. Okay. But at the same time, if you're going to bring them here, right, you ought to screen them in some substantive way, and you ought to have a way of tracking them a little bit. We certainly can do that. And the other thing you ought to do is you ought to put everybody on blast, right? We're going to hold all y'all responsible for each other. If something happens here, we're going to assume that you should have known about it, and you're going to get sent home immediately. So if somebody's doing some bullshit, it's in your interest to say, oh, that's not fair. That's group punishment. No shit it is. Number two, Trump says he doesn't care. He doesn't consider brain injuries sustained by U.S. troops during Iran missile barrage as serious. People will like rise up in indignation over that comment. But let me just say this. If you're being evacuated days after the event, right, you may have a headache, and it may be classified because of the concussive effect of something that landed a far enough distance away, right? Like you have reoccurring headaches, or you're traumatized, or something else, right? It will be categorized under the broad heading of TBI, and then we'll begin the hand wringing. Okay. Then we'll begin the hand wringing. The truth is, you know, traumatic brain injuries are, right, significant. Okay. But I don't know that days later, right, I might have a concussion or whatever. I don't know about that. But anyway, like, and again, they're not doing a whole lot other than, I think my head hurts over there. So, number three, Marine Raiders led counterattack against al-Shabaab. Talked about that. Number four, we talked about Trump meets Iraqi counterpart. Number five, Army Secretary wants to slow the transfer of military hospitals to the Department of Health and wants to retain medical research. So I don't really care about that, right? Iran confrontation headlines. There's three of them. One, questions abound for Iranian military in the wake of the Soleimani killing. That's in the Washington Times. I'll take a look at that. Number two, successor to slain Iran general faces the same fate if he kills Americans, says the U.S. envoy. I love that. A continuation of the Vito Corleone thing, right? I'm not going to look for anybody else. I'm coming to you. Number three, U.S. likely to deploy anti-missile system to protect American troops in Iraq. So, anyway. All right. That is a look at the news here on a Thursday. We'll take a break. Tim Lynch, Jeff Kenny going to join me here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Now, so if you're just, I heard this audio last night, actually at like 2 in the morning when I woke up. So, yeah, because Napa Man starts texting me and then I'm awake. So it's Lindsey Graham talking about the impeachment. And Graham's an attorney by trade. And so this is him yesterday. And so take a listen to this. I like people with a little bit of historical perspective. Here's Lindsey Graham.
Okay, a lot of Americans have long days. A couple things. I've been involved in two impeachment trials. This is the second one. I just want to make an observation here. What the House managers were proposing yesterday is basically to destroy the institution of the presidency as we know it. Make it naked when it comes to partisan impeachment. Not have a venue to go to court and litigate privileges that have been exercised by prior presidents. When it comes to Donald Trump, they're willing to destroy the institution of the office in the name of getting him. So, bottom line, the Clinton impeachment was conducted by outside counsel. There's none here. Ken Starr spent 5 years investigating the president before we took up the matter in the House. The president was allowed to cross-examine Ken Starr at the House Judiciary Committee. He recommended 11 grounds for impeachment, and President Clinton utilized the courts extensively on his behalf. Robert Mueller was an outside counsel appointed to investigate this president. I want the public to know that this president cooperated with Mr. Mueller. He turned over 1 million documents. His lawyer testified for 30 hours. And after 2 years of investigation with 19 lawyers, 40 FBI agents, 2,000 subpoenas, and 500 search warrants, they decided to take no action. They said there was no collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. And when it came to obstruction of justice, they did not recommend any action. I thought that would be the end of it. I actually introduced legislation to say that Robert Mueller could not be removed except for cause, because the president felt like the Mueller investigation was a witch hunt. I did not. The president was frustrated.
Now, again, this is why I like Lindsey Graham. He does not play the straight line party game. He didn't do it in Syria, and he didn't do it, you know, when, you know, the president was banging the drum to get Mueller fired and the rest of that. He said, no, I think that we need answers to it. And so that's why you're hearing this today.
Because he said he did nothing wrong. I can understand that. But it was important for me to make sure that the country would have somebody to look at these allegations, because they're very serious. And I supported Mueller's ability to look. And he looked for a long time, and I thought it would be over. Mr. Schiff said yesterday what they did in the House was just like what we did with Clinton. That is absolutely untrue. From the time they authorized impeachment, it took 48 days. Not 2 years with Mueller, not 5 years like Clinton, but 48 days. The fact-finding process was done and the Intel Committee, not the Judiciary Committee. The president was denied a right to counsel in the Intel Committee and could not request witnesses. They spent one day in the Judiciary Committee. Go back and look at the tapes of how long Ken Starr testified before the Senate, excuse me, the House Judiciary Committee, of which I was a part. What we've done for the first time in American history is an impeach a president without outside counsel involved in a 48-day period. But here's what struck me the most. One of the House managers said, the reason we didn't go to court or we didn't want to go through the courts is that we couldn't impeach him before the election. They withdrew from the National Security Advisor case, where the Deputy National Security Advisor went to court and said, tell me what to do, Judge. The House actually withdrew the subpoena because they didn't want the court process to stop the impeachment train. They would have the United States Senate create an impeachment process where the president would not be allowed to go to Article III courts to argue privileges that have been argued in every other impeachment trial and have been argued by presidents since George Washington. That would destroy the institution of the presidency as we know it. What would it do? It would allow a handful and a 300-plus million country, people, along partisan lines to impeach a president without independent judicial review. Before I came here, I used to try cases. We have a lot of good lawyers in this body. All I can say is that when the court date was set, and if I showed up and I asked for a bunch of subpoenas and documents to be produced on the day of trial that I had not pursued before the trial in any serious way, I ought to get tossed out. What did we do yesterday? Exactly what happened in the Clinton impeachment trial. We're going to hear the House's case, the president's response. We're going to ask questions. Then we'll decide among ourselves, do we want to know anything more? Yesterday was about 11 hours of them telling us how bad their case was, in my view. They did not pursue these witnesses because they knew the president would seek judicial redress, and it literally would stop them impeaching him before the election. So the only thing I can tell the American people, when it comes to replacing this president 9 months plus from the election, you got an uphill battle with me. Because I really do believe that the best person, group of people to pick a president are the voters, not a bunch of partisan politicians. And every day we're here doing this is a day we're taken away from doing things that really matter. So when they say it was like Clinton, no. When they say the courts really have no place in impeachment, that it's all going to be done by the House and the Senate without any independent judicial review, God help us all.
Senator Steve Daines of Montana.
Congressman. If I had the time, I would play the other two, but I don't really. I want to start this interview with Jeff Kenney and Tim Lynch. But I think Lindsey Graham. I've talked about just the bullshit political nature of this thing, and it's one of the worst parts of our democracy today, and nothing seems to be able to slow it down or derail it. And both sides are guilty of it. They can't, you almost had 25 congressmen murdered at a baseball practice, a year and a half ago? Hasn't slowed them down. I mean, if any, arguably this is worse. Again, never in the history of the nation has a president been impeached with no crime alleged. Never. So again, Donald Trump's a shady dude, man. And I think everybody would admit to that. But impeachment is a gravely serious offense. And the way this whole thing has been done, and now, as Lindsey Graham points out, right? Without the witnesses, without all the things that you do in a bipartisan impeachment. And when the next guy points out that every impeachment in our nation's history has been bipartisan. There's been representatives from both sides of the aisle that have supported it. This is the first one that doesn't have that. So again, the whole nature of it, in my opinion, is disgusting. All right. And so we'll take about a 30-second break. We'll come back, and you'll hear Jeff Kinney and Tim Lynch. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.